Okay, so welcome to the Walled Garden podcast, or if you're watching this on YouTube, then welcome to the channel. So I'm doing two things that make me somewhat uncomfortable in this video slash podcast. The first thing I'm doing is that I'm actually filming myself while I'm speaking. For some reason, I feel very comfortable being filmed speaking when I'm interviewing people, or, you know, when there's other people on the end of the video. I feel very comfortable with that. But for some reason, I've never felt quite as comfortable with just filming myself when there's nobody on the other end. So that's one thing that I'm doing. And then also, what I'm going to try and do in this video is, usually when I'm doing a podcast, I will kind of chop up the recording and piece the bits together, and, you know, so that way if I make a mistake, or if I say something that I think goes down the wrong tangent, or if I go on another tangent, then, you know, I can kind of get rid of that. And I'm going to try and not do that in this episode. I think the reason is I recently spoke with somebody who said something quite wise to me. They were doing some videos, and they basically said the way that they do videos is they just press record and they start speaking and they try to take their time. And the reason is because if they were giving a sermon or something like that, then, you know, in the moment, you can't just take back something that you said. You can't just pause and say, well, let's rewind there and then start recording again. And I kind of like that. So I'm going to, you know, in the spirit of openness and authenticity, I'm going to try and have a somewhat conversational attitude towards this this video slash nonstop recording experience. Anyway, I'm going to get into the nuts and bolts of what I want to say here. So this Friday, we actually have our first Walled Garden meetup of the year. This is where Sharon LaBelle, Kai Whiting, and myself will be taking it in turns, sharing messages that we feel are really important for our community. And so whether that is to do with Stoicism or, you know, another aspect or, sorry, another philosophical idea or another thinker that we want to explore, or another thing that we've been thinking about that we think is really important to deliver to our community. And so this Friday is the first one, as I said, and I'll be running it. And there was one passage from Ralph Waldo Emerson's introduction to his essays on nature that I really wanted to discuss with everybody, because when I read this, I thought, man, this is such powerful stuff and can really help us to think about what should be our major aim when it comes to our practice and study of philosophy, especially in these modern times. So I want to read a couple of things for you today. The first thing that I want to read for you is actually a poem that I wrote. And the reason I want to read it to you is because I think it really relates to the message that Emerson is trying to get across in his writings. Then I'm going to read you that passage from Emerson as well, and I'm going to discuss it a little bit. And what I hope will happen by the end of this video podcast will be that you'll have a bit of a better understanding of the kind of messages, ideas, philosophical concepts that I want to be discussing in our meetup on Friday. And then if you want to come along, then we'd love to see you there. And I'll put a link in the show notes to where you can go and register. It's absolutely free. We'd love to see you there. And that way, you know, you guys will have a bit of a better understanding of the core ideas we're going to be discussing. And then we can just get straight into having a great philosophical discussion with everybody. So I'm excited about that. Nonetheless, I'm going to go over, I'm going to read you this poem. So this poem that I'm going to read you now, I wrote this as a part of the 13-part poetic series that I put together for my album, my musical album, Paradisa Suite. And so I'm going to put a link in the show notes as well for where you can listen to that, because I do recommend it. It's I've had some great feedback from people about the music and even the poetry as well. It goes quite deep. And it was really my first true, authentic, artistic expression. So nonetheless, I'm going to read you this poem. This is called I Tread Softly There. Ferns grow in the valley. They block out sun and sky. A dark and weathered hue of green, some natives passing by. They make no fuss about their way, and neither do they rush. They stop to marvel at the stream, which trickles neath the brush. Their mongrel boldly watches for intruders in the scrub. A baby sleeps on mother's back and dreams of witchetty grubs. The air, so thick with pollen, sinks into their lungs, and then, as a grand bouquet bursts forth in mind, they gently breathe again. The trickling water calms their souls, the luscious scene gives lift. Through dense and fertile lands they roam, mid ancient trees they drift. These souls, they live in Eden, they walk with God each day. The breath of life flows through their lungs, great nature guides their way. And if I dare to wonder, if I dare to be aware, I'll walk the paths where they have gone, and I'll tread softly there. And as I tend the garden, sweet remembrance will be mine of the wisdom which once filled my heart as I walked neath fig and vine. So that's the poem. It's called I Tread Softly There. And what I was trying to get at in this poem is I was actually very inspired by a painting that I saw in the Sydney Classical Art Museum, I believe it was. I don't think that's the name of it, but nonetheless, you can look it up. Man, I can't remember the exact name of the painting or the painter, but I'm going to put a link in the notes for you because it's such a beautiful old painting by a classic Australian painter. And the painting is of this beautiful little fern gully and the rich green, and you know, it's this basically this painting of this fern gully, and there's a couple of Aboriginals and there's a mother with her baby on her back and they're walking through this gully. And when I saw this painting, it just sent shivers down my spine. It's just such a beautiful picture of this moment, right? And that inspired this poem. And this poem is about looking to our ancestors of the past, the people who came before us, and their relationship with nature, their relationship with the world around them. You know, it says in this poem, they walked with God each day. Their relationship with the fundamentals of reality, the divine nature of existence, right? And so what I'm getting at in this poem is, you know, can we pull ourselves back there by remembering the fact that we come from these generations of people who experienced something perhaps far deeper than the experience that we might have on a day-to-day basis in our modern, busy world, you know. And so it's very easy to fall away from the enlightened experience. I mean, you know, you take a look at the Bible, for example. Such a core idea of the grand narrative of the Bible is this idea of humans going from a garden setting or a paradise setting, right, and falling away into, falling away out of enlightenment, falling away from God, right, and then slowly clawing their way back up, in the same way that Seneca said. He said, you know, no man does wrong by struggling uphill towards the heights from which he had fallen, right? I know I didn't get that right. I was paraphrasing, but he says something to that effect. We are always trying to claw our way back up to that enlightened state that we know is possible because we know that so many ancestors have come before us, so many great philosophers, great theologians, great mystics, these people who come along and show us that enlightenment is possible, or in the case of the Stoics, that eudaimonia, the flourishing existence, is possible. And we have to remember that. We have to remember that is an experience that humankind is capable of having, right? It's why we have these sacred texts that get passed on from generation to generation to generation, because there's something in them that ignites an intuition within us that allows us to return, if but for a brief moment, to that state of flourishing existence. And so, as I said, that's what I'm trying to get at in this poem here, is to get us to remember that experience and to go back there. Now, I want to read you something from Ralph Waldo Emerson. So when I read this, the start of his essays on nature, he said something that really lit a flame within me, you know, because I guess for the past few years on the podcast, whether it was on the Practical Stoic podcast, now the Walled Garden, what I've been trying to do is I'm searching around and you kind of, you get to know that I'm doing this by looking back in hindsight and you think, okay, well, let's not say what I'm doing, but let's look at what I've been doing and let's infer the motivation, right? It seems like what I'm trying to do is to even though I do a poor job all the time, right? I'm trying to figure out what's the highest aim here, you know? When I speak to people, I'm paying attention. Does this person inspire me? Do their mannerisms, does the way that they approach these questions move me inside? Does it make me feel as though they're onto something extremely important and rich and deep? And so I'm going to read this to you now. I'm going to read you this now, because I think this is essentially what we should all be doing in the philosophical pursuit. Okay. So Ralph Waldo Emerson, he says this: our age is retrospective. It builds the sepulchres of the fathers. It writes biographies, histories, and criticism. The foregoing generations beheld God and nature face to face, we through their eyes. Why should not we also enjoy an original relation to the universe? Why should not we have a poetry and a philosophy of insight and not of tradition? And a religion by revelation to us and not the history of theirs? Embosomed for a season in nature, whose floods of life stream around and through us and invite us, by the powers they supply, to action proportioned to nature, why should we grope among the dry bones of the past, or put the living generation into masquerade out of its faded wardrobe? The sun shines today also. There is more wool and flax in the fields. There are new lands, new men, new thoughts. Let us demand our own works and laws and worship. So, apart from my terrible reading, that's something we're going to have to get used to, or I'll have to get better at while I'm practicing this non-stop speaking sort of thing. But what I really love in here, he says, why should not we have a poetry and a philosophy of insight and not of tradition, and a religion by revelation to us and not the history of theirs? This is so vital. What an important moment in literary history, right? This brilliant thinker coming along and saying, we're living in a time where we don't have people who are experiencing the depth and the wisdom and the enlightenment of the past. What they're doing is they're criticizing it, or they're writing histories of it, or, you know, they're writing commentaries on these things. But who is actually having the experience of personal revelation? If you like me are very interested in theology and religion, you know, who among us is having the experience of revelation that we read about in places like the Bible? If you're following Stoicism, right, and you're on that Stoic path, who among us is having that experience of being in agreement with nature, right, which is the ultimate goal of Stoicism? Who among us is truly seeking wisdom, truly seeking virtue, and having the experience of understanding how it feels to come into contact with wisdom, to come into contact with virtue? This is such a vital piece of information, or piece of wisdom that we read from Emerson, that can inspire us to say, well, am I having the experience? And if you're not having the experience, I've got a question for you. Is there anything that you could be aiming at that would be better than that? is there anything you could aim at that would be better than having not just the study and not just the practice, but seeking that experience? And there's an important thing here, right? Because I understand that we don't necessarily aim at the experience. It's kind of like one of those things that the more you grasp at it, the farther away it's going to get, right? Especially in the Stoic philosophy, what we would say is that you focus on the process of perfecting your character, right? So you focus on perhaps the study, yes, and perhaps the practice, yes. But we always have to keep in mind, remember what Epictetus said, you know, he said, I don't want to see your weights, right? I want to see your shoulders. I want to see the goods that have come as a result of the weights, right? The weights don't mean anything if you don't have the shoulders to prove it, right? to prove that you've done the work. So yes, we do the work. We do the work over and over again. We practice these things. We study and we get to know what it would perhaps mean to be blended with virtue, as Seneca might say. But we always need to keep it in mind. Ultimately, if we're not having the experience, we need to think, what are we doing wrong? And I believe that one of the more profound things that we can take away from this passage from Emerson is, you know, think about today. Think about the kind of books that are out there. Think about the kind of people who are generally in the public view, or think about academics, classic, you know. Are we being led by people who actually have this experience, or are we being led by people who are interested in the history of these ideas, is interested in commenting on these ideas? I've been there, you know, when I started the Practical Stoic podcast. For many years, I was commenting on the Stoic philosophy, you know, and I was going and that's that can be useful. It can be extremely useful, and you know, I've had many people reach out to me and say that, you know, those earlier episodes of the Practical Stoic, when I was just going through and picking little pieces apart and breaking them down for people, I've had many people say that that was some of the best stuff that they listened to, and some of the most important stuff that they listened to in terms of forming their own Stoic worldview. But nonetheless, I have come to a point in my own philosophical path where I've realized that I can no longer simply talk about these things. It has to be about, what are we aiming at ultimately? No longer just a commenter, right? A commentator. No longer just a critic of these ideas, or a historian of the Stoic school. It has to be about having the experience. It has to be about, that's our ultimate aim, living in agreement with nature, right? And you do that by participating in virtue. So nonetheless, I think I'm going to leave it there. I really actually enjoyed this. It's fun. And I hope that you guys will forgive me for going off on tangents and going down avenues that perhaps maybe sometimes don't relate, but I think it's fun to think these things through, even if I make a few mistakes. And hopefully by the end, there's a fuller picture here that I'm trying to paint for you guys. And I guess finally, I want to send a shout out. Before I do that, I just want to say, yeah, there's going to be a link in the show notes to where you can register for this Friday's event. If you find these ideas that I've presented to you in this episode interesting, then we'd love to see you there. Come along. We can discuss these ideas further. And I want to know from you, you know, do you feel as though these ideas are pretty sound? You know, should we be seeking that ultimate experience? You know, is that the highest thing that we can be trying to attain, you know, by definition, you know? And how might we go about doing that? You know, what are your ideas? I'd love to hear them. So, come along to the meetup, go to the link. And I do just want to do a shout out because, I was out on a run recently, today, and I got a message on Instagram from, a new patron, and he basically said, listen, I just wanted to reach out and say, thank you so much. You know, I was in a rough spot in my life. And, you know, those earlier episodes of the Practical Stoic really helped me to, you know, turn my life around. And he really was appreciative. And nothing feels better than that, to know that your work is being well received and put into practice, right? And so I want to do a shout out to Joshua. Thank you so much for that really kind message. If it is Joshua, I couldn't tell by his Instagram name, but he was the most recent patron, so perhaps it wasn't Joshua. But nonetheless, my point being, Josh, if that is who you were, you reminded me of really the purpose of what I'm doing here, and I think it's good to have that reminder that ultimately, you know, if I'm in a position of sharing this wisdom of the past and perhaps trying to embody it within myself and trying to be an example of these things and trying to bring people along on that journey of experiencing the depth of these great traditions, ultimately it all comes back down to how can I help people more to have this experience? How can I help people to turn their lives around when they're in a rough position? And there's nothing better than that. And so thank you, Joshua, just for reminding me of that. It's a beautiful thing. It's an absolute gift to be able to do this. So, that's all I really wanted to say. Thank you so much for listening to this. As I like to say on the Soul Searching with Seneca series, these episodes are only as good as they are put into practice in our lives. So just really meditate on these ideas that you've heard in this episode and come along to the meetup. Let me know if I'm absolutely crazy or if there's something true about what I've said here today, if there's something wise about what we've been talking about. So thanks, everybody. I'll see you at the meetup and have a beautiful, blessed day. You've been listening to the World Garden Podcast. For more episodes just like these or to join our community, go to thewalledgarden.com. See you there.